All right. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. Nice beep already. We're going to go ahead and get started. So if you haven't been to one of the Unplugged sessions before, what we basically do is you guys are going to help me build a talk on the fly. We're going to talk about whatever is most interesting to you. Let's switch over to my machine here. There we go. So we're going to start off, first of all, by getting a set of questions from you. And what we'll do is we'll organize those in the right kind of order, and then we'll have a conversation about whichever pieces you're interested in. So if you want to give me feedback on the UI or SKUs, or maybe you don't have any feedback on that, doesn't really matter, but any question you'd like in whatever area, we'll go ahead and organize those, put those together, and then we'll go through that content. And I'll probably jump over to VS and a couple things along the way just to show some of the things that are there, and then we'll kind of go from there and take any additional feedback and then questions along the way. So with that, I have a very fancy tool in front of me called Notepad, and we'll go ahead and start right there. So let's shout out questions. We'll collect a few of them up front. Okay. Sorry? What's the best way to migrate from web to MVC? Okay. Excellent. Yes. Okay, great. Yes. Okay, let's see what we hit. Occasionally connected. Sorry? Entity framework 4.5. Okay, great. Asynchronous framework? Okay. Good. Keep them coming. Okay. Light switch. Anything particular about light switch? Okay. Does that hurt WCF? Ah, yeah, yeah. Silverlight, anything in particular? Between HTML5? Okay. Versus, I got it. Okay. Okay. Roslyn, okay, great, yep. Okay. Excellent. Okay. What about VB? Ignored. Okay. Excellent. Okay, keep going. What else? Yes, with Windows 2012. Okay, got it. Okay, yep, let's put this one right there. Okay. Okay, great, we could do that. Ah, Metro on desktop, okay. 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 I heard C++. IntelliSense, anything in particular? We like it. Want to keep doing it. Somebody mentioned C++. IntelliSense, is it? It is. Okay, yeah, we can show it off, actually. Okay. Okay, the languages one. What else? Okay. Okay. Okay, good question.
Why is Visual Studio gray?
Gray? Okay.
What's happening with Windows Server App Fabric?
Windows Server App Fabric. Okay, great. Okay. I wish I had those. We could share those.
What are my platforms going to look like in this application?
Okay. It's a platform roadmap here. Support for which?
OData.
OData. Okay. Yep. Okay. Code contracts, good. I'll put that up by languages, I think. Okay. Okay. Okay, good question. Anything else?
Windows contracts, you like to create new ones.
Okay. Another integration one that's close to this guy. Let's pull him down here. Okay? Anything else? We can add more once we get going. Okay, good. Good question. So let me, now we take the fun. We got a set of language questions. Let's put those here. I think those are good. We got some Metro questions. Yeah, this is a VS. It's a couple on Visual Studio. So we'll create a couple sections here. Okay. And some .NET functionality we have here. And this is roadmap. Okay. Metro. This will just take a second, and then we'll go through all of these. Here we go. Occasionally connected Metro. We might as well talk about this up here. Now let's put the languages stuff here. And Roslyn. Yeah, we'll put the languages stuff right up on top here. And then we've got platform with phone, code contracts. Yes, we do. It's the only downside. I've got to wait for me to get everything lined up here. We'll put the express queues up here. And say OData, I will put here with the framework. IntelliTrace, and AppFabric. And more languages. I'll tell you what, we'll start up here and put these together, and then we'll kick off. Okay, what about garbage collection?
Performance and garbage collection.
performance and which runtime, JavaScript or CLR?
CLR.
Okay, great. You can own both of those. Okay. Let's go ahead and start there, and do feel free to interrupt me and follow-up questions and that kind of stuff if I don't hit everything. We'll start off on the top, but we can always add more, and we'll kind of go from there. The first set of questions we have up here are around some of our languages innovation that we're bringing in 2012, and frankly, some stuff that's coming after that. A couple of things if you're not familiar with them. First of all, Roslyn. How many people have seen Roslyn, played with Roslyn? A few people. Okay, probably about maybe 10%. Roslyn is the code name for a new project that we are building. When you say compiler as a service, that is the Roslyn project. What we're doing in the C# and Visual Basic team is we're actually going through and re-implementing the compilers to basically use themselves. So two things as part of the architecture. One, we're actually turning the compilers themselves into an internal service. And what I mean by that is we're actually going to expose APIs, so text to tree, tree to text, and things like that. That means, for example, I can take snippets of source code, and I can actually call an API and say, please compile this and execute it. So for example, one of our projects with Roslyn, we have a REPL window, which is basically an intermediate window. I can type in code, hit enter, type in code, and hit enter. You've had that sort of effect many times before in loosely coupled languages like JavaScript or Python or Perl or take your pick. In this particular case, we're doing it with C# and VB. Now, we're also rewriting the compilers themselves using the language. So the next version of Visual Basic, not the one with 2012, but the one after that, is actually written in Visual Basic. Okay? And that way, so why are we doing that? A couple different reasons. One, from an internal perspective, inside of the IDE, if you think about it, we have a nice little quadrant, four quadrants. I've got basically two columns, which are called the compiler, and another one called the IDE support, one row for VB, one row for C#. Today, in the current product, those are all four separate implementations. And so when we did things like introduce Lambda support, link, those sorts of things, the compiler guys would actually come in and implement Lambdas inside of one of those boxes. So like C# gets Lambda support. Then we have to turn around in the IDE version, which is a separate parser, and go make it smart enough to handle the authoring and all the rest of that, which is kind of lame. So if you've ever had experience where you've run into, and hopefully you haven't hit this because it would be a bug, but if you've ever had a case like in previews or et cetera, where you typed in a completely legitimate piece of code, and if you compiled it, it worked, but the editor couldn't handle it, then you're really seeing the difference between those two implementations. So by actually turning the compiler into a service, we can actually consume it and then start using it inside of the IDE. And so already, for example, with the Roslyn CTP that we've released, we've actually been able to come back and do things like copy from one language, paste into another, or introduce all sorts of interesting refactorings into the system. There's a bunch of really cool stuff up there. If you're interested in learning more about that one, let me pull this up real quick just so you can see it. Actually just did a blog post on this. And it's got all sorts of examples and pointers to the CTP, so you can get that. Let's see, Roslyn right here. And within that, you'll be able to find out pointers to it. Go ahead and pick it up, take a look at it. Here's examples of the C# interactive window, for example, actually compiling directly, the APIs and reference here in Visual Basic, et cetera. And there's a pointer to that in the SDK. So the other reason why that's interesting is going forward with that version, if you have need to actually use snippets of C# or .NET style code in your own projects or your own domain, you'd actually be able to start picking it up and treating it like a DSL. Right? I could actually just embed it wherever I want and connect up to it. So very cool project. That's in CTP form. The main reason why we're doing that is we have to basically compile all of .NET by the time we're done. Right? And so generally when we bring new stuff out, you'll see us do a CTP of a brand new compiler, and we'll release it simultaneously with a production version. And then as soon as we start the next version of the tree, we make that the primary compiler, and it spends another 2 years, or whatever the time frame is, hardening. We have to compile millions of lines of code, including ourselves, before we want to turn it on permanently. Okay? So when we say compiler as a service and Roslyn, those are essentially the same two things, and there's a bunch of really cool things in there. Okay, so that's all of our services work. Now, the next piece, new language features, and I kind of put that next to async. There's a bunch of stuff that we did in Visual Studio 2012. The latest version, for example, of C# and Visual Basic. Async is probably one of the biggest new features that we've done in there. Asynchronous has been a problem that people have had to deal with a really long time. And so we wanted to provide a pattern that was easy to write code against that, and essentially, you know, make it so that the API set themselves, you can write what looks like pretty reasonable, you know, straightforward serialized code. But of course, it is doing all the task management stuff underneath. So if you've ever written, you know, very complicated, you know, multi-threaded code, you wind up with lots of blocks and lots of conditions, and it's kind of hard to do that. And oftentimes, what you're really doing is, I want, for example, the kind of you know, rapid feedback of an asynchronous feed coming in, like I'm binding data, and I can write it in a really dumb way that gives a straightforward loop, but then you kind of sit there and you're waiting. I want to actually be able to eat that feed kind of coming through. So async gives us that. If you are a JavaScript programmer, you're probably familiar with the promises pattern and the way that you kind of maybe use jQuery and you pull things back with, you know, dot complete or dot in progress, another sort of API syntax that allows you to deal with these things asynchronously. So that support is built into the latest versions of the compiler and will be there going forward as well. Yes, sir. With the CCR? Yeah. So here, all we're doing with these is we're basically implementing the await and multiple keywords. Those would then plug in on top of whatever underlying infrastructure you have. Now, in our case, we're plumbing them through all the task libraries and the rest of those sort of things. And so, you know, that's the part that's, you know, just basically built right in. So you can still compose things with other APIs, and you can put, you know, things on top of them. Well, that'll be the core, you know, part that we build into .NET and have, you know, support for. All right, so that's all the new async work that we've got, and that's actually, the good news is, you probably have seen us do this as well with the Metro style stuff that we've been doing. It plugs in very nicely with that. Actually, all three languages that we, you know, four languages we have primary support, the two CLR versions, .NET and Visual Basic, in addition to JavaScript and C++ also have built in, you know, support and patterns for that, and we've made sure that the APIs that you can call at a Windows RT also work very well with that. So it gives you a nice kind of interactive, you know, sort of piece there. There was a question on C++ and IntelliSense. We've actually got IntelliSense in C++, so be curious to hear more. What I can tell you is for Visual Studio 2010, one of the implementation things that we did for C++ is we actually wrote as part of the front-end process. The front-end is the part that does the parsing. The back-end does code gen. The linker pulls it together. The front-end actually took all of the parse tree that it creates, and we actually store your program symbols in a local database. We don't actually publish the database, but, you know, because C++ usually has very large surface area and lots of symbols, we shred those apart, put it in a database, and then added caching on top of that. Now, that also had some additional features that allowed us to do things like ifdefs and macros. And so, you know, because you do, like, you know, ifdef windows and define that, then we have that all the way through. For this release, we have that same support with a few, you know, kind of places where we found very, very large code bases. We added some additional scale and some performance to that so that we could get, you know, a little bit faster response times in that. But that's basically the support that we have for IntelliSense. No. And I wonder, does somebody mean IntelliTrace? IntelliTrace. Thank you. Okay. Sorry. We said that. So I misheard you. Yes. Okay, great. That's a different question. Yes. Yes, we did add CLI support. Very popular, very common request, yes. I know. And it was the biggest mistake we ever made. Yeah, no, it's you know, it's obviously really great, especially for interop layers with C++ and .NET, and you have to have that. So it was a very, very common request that came back through and have that. Okay, so let me finish the language features here real quick, and then we'll answer the IntelliTrace. So sorry, I misheard you. So I love all my kids. They're always nice. Yeah, Visual Studio is a huge, 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 huge product. So VB and C#, one of the things we've been embarking on with those two languages is making sure that we have parity. So one of the sets, the new features that were asked for, we've added a lot of features in some cases where maybe C# had a feature or VB had a feature, but they weren't kind of consistent. So we've gone through and added a bunch of parity for that. So we're still doing a ton of stuff with Visual Basic. It's still, you know, first-class supported language inside of the system. And so I think the question was, hey, you know, why is it ignored? Well, you know, the thing I would point to is you can go build Azure Sites, you can build, you know, web Windows Phone applications, and now with Windows 8 Metro, you can actually build Metro applications. We have VB templates for all of those as well. So we still very much support VB. You know, we're going to continue to evolve VB as well as C#, and we have F# in the box and other languages too. So the languages in the box, we will definitely go ahead and go do that. Now, with respect to the favorite features, that's one of the problems with Visual Studio. It is a huge, you know, between that, the .NET framework, et cetera, there's a huge amount of surface area in there. What I can tell you is some of the things that have been exciting for us, in particular, trying to get our team executing. People didn't ask about team, but one of the things we're doing, we've got about over 1,000 engineers that are working on a combination of .NET, Visual Studio, the compilers, the runtimes, the debuggers, all the rest of those sort of tools. One of the things we just did last week is we actually upgraded the entire developer division over to the RC version of Team Foundation Server. And that's so that we can all start using some of the new project planning and stuff like that. So if I had to start picking out features, one of the things that I really like is we made a huge shift in this release to about 90% of the dev teams using an agile approach. How many people are using Scrum for development? Yes. Okay, very good. So we're bringing about 75-80%. And so we're about 90% now using Scrum across that. We have in the neighborhood of 12 terabytes worth of data that we use in our Team Foundation service and or server. And with this latest build, we're actually able to now go ahead and use all of the product and planning stuff. Now, why not? It's in the RC. Well, the big problem that we have is we take that, you know, how do we get to 12 terabytes? We have basically millions and millions of lines of code, right? Like the oldest product that we have in developer division, at least with respect to when it was first authored, is C++. Okay, and that code was first authored, some of the basics of it, back in the 80s. And it's one of the oldest Microsoft products, along with you know, some of the VB variants that we've got at Microsoft. Now, of course, we're updating them every year and that kind of stuff. But you can imagine, we kick off hundreds of builds every night on millions of lines of code. And by the time we're done, we have to take those builds and by the next day have them installed and fully tested. And we do that every single day. Right, and so to us, being able to get some of that scalability across the system, and now we're able to, you know, sit on top of Team Foundation Server, and we're able to go use all the new planning products. You know, we have the task boards and that kind of stuff. So if I had to pick out some features that have really helped the team out, then those are definitely helpful. Now, me personally, writing a lot of code myself, I really like the search that we've embedded inside of the IDE. It was really handy. Just being able to go up and find through all the commands is awesome. And if you're doing a lot of web development, the new DOM explorers, the CSS editing that we've added in there, some of the JavaScript and IntelliSense improvements and those sort of things are also a bunch of cool features. Yes, sir? Yes, we do. So I'll repeat the question so folks can hear. So you've got this big repository. Do you have the you know, the ability to go back and search, you know, through? We do. And we should make that available. Did I mention we have a backlog? We do. We have a couple of different tools that we use internally. One of the things that we wind up doing, this is one of the reasons why we took with TFS, it has the object layer and the programmability layer. We have tons and tons and tons of internal tools that we use. So we've got things in the framework, for example, that take the public symbols from every build, and when a new build comes out, they do a comp and look for any new or breaking changes that someone may have introduced, right? Just so we make sure that we don't wind up causing issues with you know, breaking changes coming out. That's an example. The search feature across both bugs, work item tracking, as well as source is another internal tool that we have. There are some power tool kind of stuff that's out there. Sounds like that would be useful. Yeah, okay, great. So we should add that. Yes, sir?
Do you ever include in your blog some of those internal tools that you guys use
to find useful? Maybe you're not going to. Yeah, I haven't yet, but we certainly should. One of the things that we did is we created this category of things that we've released called power tools. And I don't know if, has anybody used the productivity power tools for 2010? They're really nice. Yeah, great. And so we introduced two categories for these. One is the power tools. Power tools basically say, look, they're not formally supported, but they're ideas, and we think they're interesting. And so they kind of use it at your own risk, but the teams that build them are pretty passionate about them. They will go ahead and fix it. And we're really kind of experimenting. You tell me, do you like them? So many of those were very popular that we actually did build almost all of them into Visual Studio 2012. So that's one category. We have some power tools also for TFS, things like trimming the database attachments and making those smaller. We've had some collaboration, you know, sort of tools, et cetera. The other category is feature packs. Feature packs, those are more formal. So you see something called a feature pack, it means, look, we're really going to support this. It's localized around the world. You can call support. If you run into a bug, we'll fix it for you. And it really says, I want to give you this feature. We just didn't have enough time, whatever the current release was. And I don't want to wait for a big, big release to kind of come along every 2-3 years, whatever it looks like. So those are the two categories. We do look at user voice for the top voted issues. And so if you guys have ideas or things like that, stick them up on the user voice site and vote for them, because we absolutely do go through that list, and we make that as part of our priority decisions around the backlog that we put in place.
Okay.
Yes, good question. I'll ask about Lisa knows. I will bing it. Hot ideas, user voice, visualstudio.uservoice.com. Oh, look at that. What's the first one? Anybody here vote for that? Add some color. Yes, okay. I like your questions. Your questions correlate pretty well. So this might be generating new ideas right now as everybody's reading through that. Yes, but there's a whole bunch of different answers for that. Okay. So, that's our first set of ones, and like I said, we could keep going forever on features. I won't do that. There's a lot to love. We pretty much updated about every single component. That's the other thing I would throw out that I'm actually pretty happy with for this release. When we started off the 2012 release cycle, which is over 2 years ago, one of the things I did is I put the entire engineering team through scenario-focused engineering, which is basically just a problem-solving approach and a lot of the agile, behavioral-driven development, those sort of things. There's lots of different philosophies, but it just basically means, look, just be really crisp on what customer problem you're solving and keep asking that all the time as you do design, which is good. We also put everybody through Scrum training, including my LT. So we basically sat down and did Scrum training, and basically even the folks with the fancy titles that wear suits, well, you know, we don't wear suits, but you know, that kind of thing, we went through and did Scrum training also and participated in everything, and you know, that was actually fantastic for that. As a result, what I can tell you is you're seeing about half the number of milestones than what we had in 2010, right? So if you remember, we had two betas in 2010. We had an RC and a refresh of an RC. We did some LCTPs, you know, a bunch of those sorts of things, and you kept giving us good feedback. This time around, I think with the project management tools and that kind of stuff, we released the beta and RC, and our next milestone will be RTM. And that's pretty darn good. And I have not found us struggling along the way for that. So we're pretty happy with the process improvements and those sort of things and generally just useful sort of stuff. We also concentrated heavily on performance and reliability. Those were two things that we kind of felt like, look, those are essentially features. Sometimes the teams don't think about those the right way. It's like, hey, I want some new menu, some new thing, you know, look at this. And it's like, you know, some of us spend more time looking at Visual Studio than our significant others. So that's where I think some of the comments on the, you know, the UI kind of come in. But it also means that you want a fast, responsive, reliable interface, right? So we need to make sure that works well. Okay, so IntelliTrace, let me answer that one. So unfortunately, no, we don't have C++ support for IntelliTrace yet. Hello? Okay, careful where I stand. We don't have support for C++ IntelliTrace yet. It is something we have on the backlog. I would like to get to have that. We are looking through in some of the IntelliTrace stuff. If you went to the foundational session, then Cameron and Keller probably talked a little bit about some of the new stuff that's coming through. We are trying to add some additional support for some of the other environments. I think SharePoint's very interesting. I think some of the filtering is some of the other questions that people are asking. So we'll be making some of those sort of improvements, especially through the end of this calendar year, you know, once we get through the release. Since we've now labeled, you know, Visual Studio, you kind of know that when it's going to be shipping. So we'll have additional stuff that comes out after that. I would like to add IntelliTrace for C++. That is on the backlog, something interesting. We are going to make IntelliTrace a core part of the developer operations stuff that we talked about at the keynote yesterday. That's something we've been making huge investments in. And I think the ability to get that trace log, I mean, it's very useful both running it. Things like being able to trace SQL and just have it there with the debugger is a very, you know, cool feature. But also being able to get the after effect debugging and being able to get that from ops and pull it in like we showed yesterday is really super cool. So I'd like to continue to expand that for all the languages. Over time, you should expect all the languages and the runtimes to start picking up a lot of parity. We're just further ahead on .NET right now. What we have added for C++ is unit testing in addition to some of the new implementations for the C++ standard that is coming through, and then a whole bunch of work that we did for, of course, all the Metro applications and making that a kind of a first-class environment for writing Metro-style applications as well. So lots of cool new stuff in there. All right. Oh, great. Speaking of user voice. Okay, so APIs, colors, all the rest of that kind of stuff. Out of curiosity, anybody using the dark theme? I'm curious. That's my friends. Okay. It turns out we've done user studies on this, and there's about, you know, like 30% of us that just love the dark theme. And there's 70% that just hate the dark theme. It might be the rest of you. I'm not quite certain. So the UI, I mean, top level, what are we trying to do? Well, the top level thing we're trying to do really is try and give you focus on the core parts of what you're building. So one of the things that we found with Visual Studio 2010 is that you would have essentially, okay, my title bar is up there. I've got a two rows typically or one row of some kind of a toolbar, and you'd hit F5 and like four more would pop in and start coming down. Then we'd have, you know, windows popping in from the right, you know, with Solution Explorer, and you might have the kind of object or IntelliTrace coming in from the left. You have the output window in the bottom, and someplace over here about the size of your wallet was your code. Got a lot of feedback on that, right? So like one of the core things we tried to do with this version, you can kind of see it here. This is kind of a silly resolution. We're only on 720 for the projector, but you get the idea. But, you know, so you're only down to one. And we pretty much went through and did testing on only the icons and bars that you liked. We tried to fold in the other pieces so they fold in nicely and give you an easy way to find them. And basically try and maximize the pixel space for the code that you're working on, as well as if you're doing forms design or whatever, you know, the top level thing is. So that's the design goal for it. And then in the meantime, go add things like search and quick and pivot and those sort of things. The Solution Explorer was another example that we had done in the power tools, so that rather than having to pull up an object viewer, you know, and have yet more windows pop up, what are things that are contextual and in place that would be much easier to go do? So that's the intent for it. Now, we got three loud pieces of feedback on the beta. The first one was the colors. The common thing was, you know, why is it too gray? It's depressing me, you know, those sorts of things as well. Now, the design philosophy, and I will tell you up front, I am not a great, you know, kind of design guy. I'm kind of an engine. I'm a CLR guy. I helped write the CLR, so I'm kind of like console apps and stick figures, and I, you know, I'm not like great at that. But the design philosophy is, look, the more that we have stuff distracting you, the more it naturally pulls your eye, you know, away from that. So that was the design philosophy for that piece, is to, you know, undersell some of that, remove some of the gradients, some of the loud stuff, so that your code pops out in front. So that was one comment, is that it's too gray. You've gone too far. The pendulum swung all the way the other direction. Yeah, that's probably too far. The next piece of feedback we got was around the fonts, and that had to do with a combination of two things, the readability of the fonts and the caps that were coming through on the fonts themselves. And so we took that feedback, and the last one was kind of a contrast within things, like, hey, if it's enabled or disabled, you know, this gray theme taken way too far. So we did go back with the RC, and we got a lot of great feedback. The one that resonated with me, especially as a developer, was, you know, when people would say, hey, you know, it turns out that I actually use the color of some, especially in like the Solution Explorer, I actually use the icons to help me figure out where my files are. Like, it's, you know, as much as you're thinking it's distracting you, it actually helps me go find it really quickly. And so we added those back in. We added color back into the icons up on top. So you see the green on simulator, or the go on debugging was one of my number one requests for that. So we added those sort of things back in and some additional treatments like that. Now, we did go ahead and change. You'll notice, for example, that Solution Explorer, let me pin this one, and if I add, you know, Team Explorer, et cetera, those were harder to read when they were all caps, and they would kind of get shrunk down. And so we put those back in camel casing, you know, up, you know, capital, lowercase. And then we have the caps up on the title bar. Now, again, here's the thing. We are making UI changes into the product. And one of the things that we are tracking is that our visual language from Microsoft, it is evolving, right? And so if you look at the Metro style applications that we run on the system, you'll definitely find that, you know, we're going to have different kind of fonts, et cetera, on the machine. And that's one of the things that that you want. So one of those styles is you're going to come back and see a little bit more of that kind of font treatment. So for example, if I look up here at the top, I've got all caps in here as well. You got a bunch of websites that are like that, and I think you'll start to see more of that. So as we go forward, I want to make sure that VS is actually keeping up with those style changes that we're actually making so that you don't look at the product 2 years from now and go, wow, this is kind of feeling old. I'm using, you know, Windows 8 and a whole bunch of other things, and that APIs are starting to look a little tired. Now, that said, we heard the feedback, again, on user voice that says, that's great, but stop yelling at me. All caps means yelling. You know, I look at this thing all day. That kind of drives me nuts. So we are adding an option back in that you can turn it off, and you can pick whichever one you'd like. That'll be there. So you'll be able to do that, and if you're using the RC and it's already driving you nuts, several people have discovered the key that we already had that did that, and I think they left a whole bunch of comment trails on my blog, so you can go back in and find that. So if you really don't like it, the key is published. I'm assuming everybody's proficient at regedit and can go ahead and flip that key back over. So we'll add some more stuff back in. Hopefully that'll help you feel good about, you know, kind of where we're headed there. I think we will add more color along the way, mostly just to keep up with the themes. I mean, here's the way I would describe it. You know, because some people ask, like, why don't you just go back to the old themes? Like, just, you know, just give me an option for 2010, which I understand. It's like, you know, I love that, you know, the theme and that kind of stuff that's there. The one thing I have found with UI changes, and you'll actually see this in the comment trails, is that oftentimes the UI stuff can be fairly polarizing, right? Does anybody remember when the start button actually appeared in Windows, right? I mean, all the way back. So when you think about that, a lot of people are now looking at Windows 8 and saying, hey, where's the start, you know, pearl? Where's the button? The little round button. I don't understand. Why isn't it here? And, you know, it's like, okay. And it's like, just give me that thing back. And yet when that round circle came in, people were pissed because the start circle went away, right? Remember the Start Me Up, the Rolling Stones, when we launched 95? It was a big green start circle back there. And then it's like, where the hell is the circle? Just give me that one back. You know, like, what are you doing? So then you look back at some of those things, and even when, I've been at Microsoft for 20 years, okay, I remember when we did Windows 3.1, and we actually came out with 95, and there were complaints then, where's File Manager and Program Manager? What the hell is this start thing? I don't understand. You see what I'm saying? So yeah. Okay. Some of you do that, and I see some nods here. That people are going, yeah. Okay. I do remember that actually. So with the UI, just recognize it is kind of a subjective and a visceral sort of thing. Some people absolutely loved that new UI, and a lot of people voted saying, I don't quite like it. And sometimes what happens is, as long as you've, you know, kind of targeted in the right direction, you know, we kind of start using it. It's like, oh, okay. I actually see how this is meant to work, and now I kind of like it. But sometimes we don't get it right. In which case, I'm happy to take the feedback, and, you know, we make changes to it. Yes, sir. And which? Yeah. Why not add the theme pack and put that back? And we have that for 2010. So why don't we have that? I will tell you specifically. One of the things that we did with this version is we've actually gone through and started to add support for being able to handle very large displays and things that we're seeing now with Windows support. And in fact, many of you are probably running very, very large monitors. And you know, like if you're like me, at work anyway, I've got one monitor, big one, where I've got a bunch of code, I've got the running application, sometimes test lists over here, and I might even have some kind of a DOM explorer out there. So I've got all of those, and the screen real estate is getting larger and larger and larger. So we wanted to make sure that we could do a good job with handling scaling. Now, we already had that with WPF, so the text editors and stuff like that scale up quite well. Turns out a lot of our Chrome did not. And so, for example, the toolbars this time were actually vector, but they weren't before. So if we started to scale up the interfaces, they wouldn't actually work. So our implementation actually went down the road of, we're going to make this vector, we're going to handle the screen size and the scaling and that sort of stuff, and we're going to put the new icon sets in that go back and match. So to actually revert back to the old interfaces would require us throwing out a bunch of new code which is actually designed for the vector piece. So I'm sure you've had this problem yourself where it's like, okay, shoot, the transitive closure here doesn't work if I, you know what I'm saying? So that's when I say, yes, I'd like to add some more stuff back in, you know, based on the question. We will go ahead and do that. But we'll have to do it in the context of vector art and those sort of things. So I can't just go copy the old 2010, you know, sets back in and that kind of stuff. You know, plus we want them to, you know, a nice consistent look and feel. One of our things when we're doing UI, we correlate all these teams, we basically, you know, try and make sure that the AP, you know, the surface area does not look like a ransom note. You know what I mean? We've had ransom note problems before. Fonts don't match, tops don't match. You want a kind of consistent product that looks like one team actually worked on it. All right, let me move on to this next section here. So, the XAML and HTML and what the heck are you guys doing there and that kind of stuff. Well, with Windows 8, one of the things we're trying to do is make sure we can get maximum possible, you know, reach and really help you do your jobs. And so think about it this way. You saw the slide that we had in the keynote, and it showed a whole bunch of core, you know, sorts of technology, cloud and server and those sort of things. I do believe that if you look at the trends that we're dealing with, probably most of us are dealing with a whole bunch of touch devices of all sorts. You are dealing with constantly connected data. And we're, you know, when you think about the touch and consumerization of IT, that's causing a couple of things. One, we have a brand new generation of people entering the workforce, right? And these are the millennials and folks like that. When they're coming out, they've never not had some kind of touch device. Okay, my oldest son is 17, and I got a 15-year-old. My God. I mean, they are going to enter the workforce in a few years, and they will never know a world of kind of gray terminals and columns of characters that are squared off and all the rest of that kind of stuff, right? And when you think about that, that's one aspect. So more and more of our software is going to wind up having to start, you know, being intuitive to be useful, and we think some of the new metaphors and things that are coming out are going to be part of that. The other part about this is when you get with the consumerization of IT, I suspect a lot of people are getting demands for a lot of different types of hardware. You know, in client server, you probably did have a bunch of back-end Microsoft server, you know, components in addition to a ton of PCs, right? And that amount made it pretty easy to go target. You know, but are people being asked to target non-Microsoft clients right now? How many of you have that problem? Oh, thank goodness, it's only five. That's worse, better than I thought. No. You're probably getting a lot of that. So now we have to actually say, okay, well, how are we going to solve that problem? Okay? So we're going to do a couple different things. First of all, we are going to provide you with the best way to write back-end support and services and those sort of things. So all the new work that we've got with MVC, there's a lot of fantastic new functionality coming out of that. In addition to the support you saw last week with Azure and the new SDK, that makes it really simple for you to write that kind of back-end business logic. We'll talk about, you know, REST and services, APIs, and that kind of stuff in just a second. Now, after that, we want you to be able to go target standards-based reach if you're going to do that. Scott showed off the new MVC4 with mobile application using jQuery mobile. That gives us the ability for you to write, you know, mobile-style applications off of that back-end service. But then we're also investing with HTML so you can support doing websites, and you saw the announcement we made with LightSwitch, so you can do it there as well. That's all designed, so if you're being asked to target a plethora of devices, they're going to come with a browser no matter what. So HTML5 standards, you know, is going to make sense for that. That's why we're making the investment, so that you have that. Now, at the same time, we have first-class investments in XAML, and we're going to do first-class tooling for all the Microsoft platforms, right? And so you're seeing us use XAML in multiple places. One, my app is actually a huge WPF application. So is Explosion Blend. And we've got a bunch of new stuff that we've put in place for that, and we're tuning in a whole bunch of things for this release. So the desktop applications. We've got XAML for Windows Phone. We've got it sitting in Metro, so if you have that kind of skill set, you can do that as well. And so we're going to keep making that a first-class thing you can combine with your languages. Okay, so we're going to have that support for that. But hopefully that kind of explains, like, I think HTML5, if you want maximum possible reach across all devices, and especially with vendor policy, not every vendor is going to allow certain types of access, but they will allow HTML, which means we can get that. But we still have first-class support for doing that. And you know, then you're into the normal trade-offs. How fast is the HTML5 standard running? What's the de facto implementation? And what's the difference between the devices versus with the rich client code? You know, you've got something that we're basically making consistent everywhere we put it and trying to provide that same level of support. So I think those are kind of the app patterns and kind of connectivity that you'll land with. Now, there's a couple of Metro questions on here, occasionally connected. I think usually this question comes back to what's your data storage logic in Windows runtime. And we haven't formalized something for that, although it is something we'd be interested in looking at. There are some solutions that the community has put out there for that, putting basically lightweight database code inside of your process to go use it. You know, usually what you're winding up doing at this point is storing some local table data, and then when you get connected, pulling that back and forth. And there's a bunch of cool support in Windows for that, plus bandwidth, latency, and those sort of things as well that you can program against. So that's something, in the future we'll probably add something more formal, but we don't have it just yet. But there are solutions that you can pull in. Metro integration with desktop. I hear you. That one's very popular. But here's where you need to look at how is Metro designed and why do we have a Windows runtime, right? The Windows runtime, I had some folks that I talked to yesterday. The one thing I want to make sure people understand is that the Windows runtime and the Metro style apps, it's not just a nice little GUI layer on top of Windows 7, right? I mean, sometimes folks think that that's what it is. The truth is it's actually all the way starting from the kernel and going all the way up by the time you're done, with a couple of goals. One, we really want to make sure that it's a secure environment, right? So the one problem we've had historically with Windows code, if it has the ability, and oftentimes people run with admin, you get stuff on there and people actually invent entire product categories to go clean up your machine, which is unfortunate. So we don't want to have that problem, right? We want to have the App Store, we want to have verification, we want to make sure you have a controlled environment, and all of our IT friends at the conference, I'm sure, are actually pretty happy that that's the case. But we also want to optimize for some of these new things, so touch interface, some of the stuff that I just talked about, you have to go do that. My favorite example of this is, if you think about a touchscreen and a tablet, what's a hover effect with your finger? Like, how would you add on hover? You know what I'm saying? Like, for websites, we very typically do that. The mouse comes over and I change it, or I do a drop down or that kind of stuff. It's like 5, 4, 3, 2, we don't quite have the proximity stuff. And so you do have to, and if you look at some of the support, you can get very, very good pixel density and hit testing with a mouse. It's a fantastic device. A pen can, kind of do about the same, but my finger is pretty fat, That may mean something else. But when you get in there, it's not going to work. So the metaphors do have to change. So if you see the larger fonts, the larger surface areas and that kind of stuff, it is designed so that you can actually use those interfaces that way. Okay, now what does that mean for Windows RT? Well, what it means is we want a secure environment that goes all the way from surface to top. We do want to be able to support all of the languages so that we can bring everybody's skill set in to write Windows applications. We want to have them secure, and we want to support these new metaphors. That's why you want to put the Windows runtime. And if you look at the code underneath, some of the stuff that we had to do, we actually had to make significant changes and stuff all the way up. So from the debugger, the profiler APIs, there's a bunch of stuff in there at the lower levels. In addition to that, if you look at expression blend, for example, blend for HTML, blend on XAML, those are actually remoting the desktop inside of the design surface. So if you go expression blend with HTML, you're literally running Internet Explorer embedded in a remote session. And what we do is they put the adornments on top so the design surface area is there. So you can hover, make changes, and that kind of, you're really running the code. Which is cool, because when you think about it, a lot of that code is dynamic. Like your UI elements, they're not statically declared in some kind of angle bracket file. They're actually, I ran this code, and then this showed up, and I injected stuff into the DOM at runtime. So how do you write a designer for that? You have to run the environment. How do you go do that? Well, we actually had to work with the IE team in order to enable both the remoting of that and then also tracing information so we could actually track the styles, et cetera. So at some point, you get to it where there's OS support all the way down, and I'd literally have to go re-release a new OS to put it backwards. Does that make sense? So I know in some ways the effects make it look as though, hey, it just seems to be the GUI, but it's actually a significant amount of support through the entire stack for that to work. So what that does wind up meaning then is it is a nice secure environment. It does not have stuff that you might otherwise like to have, which is like, hey, can I just poke a hole into the desktop, do some kind of remote socket session, those sort of things. That's really about the security pieces and kind of the user interface consistency and those sort of things as well. So that's basically the rationale behind why it's there. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah, so the observation is, hey, but you know, when we're trying to get all this technology working, what about the stuff that kind of works on the desktop but not in the metro environment, and what's this going to look like? And yes, you're right. So the challenge we're going to run into, I think you use Kinect as an example. What it means is we're going to have to make sure that when we have implementations for those sorts of things, we'll probably have a bunch of stuff on the desktop, and then we have to make sure that there's one that fits the parameters around WinRT itself, right? Which is it obeys security and the rest of it. It's a subset of APIs from what we had from full Win32, again, for that security guarantee. And we are actually going through a lot of our kind of toolkits and SDKs and those sort of things and making sure that they're clean. Now, it turns out if we do that in a lot of cases, modulo the stuff that you're actually using WinRT-specific features, that actually does sometimes clean up the code. It actually, you know, because it's a, you know, we've had Win32 for 20 years. Sometimes, you know, in your code, you wind up taking advantage of stuff sometimes that you shouldn't. Same thing on the cloud. We took out some of the APIs. Some people may have noticed where you try and go to get an IP address and use that for, you know, like indexing. That's another good example. Don't do that in code in the cloud where I want to have 1,000 instances that scale off because it just doesn't work from a versioning perspective. So, yes, we will have that issue. Okay. Great. So I think we kind of beat up the metro stuff. Yeah, good question. So the question is, will Visual Studio be touch sensitive? Here's the thing. Probably not. I'm going to go on a limb there. The questions I often get about this are, you know, this, and will you do a ribbon? How many people would like me to do a ribbon? No? Okay, good. That's my feeling, too. Because when they first came out in office, hey, we got to go do a ribbon, there was a whole story. I'm like, no, please don't. The thing is, I actually think some of this stuff is very specific to the type of application that you're building, right? And so there's nothing wrong with ribbons. I think that ribbons are awesome for certain types of users and certain types of tasks. And I can actually imagine interesting cases where we could come in with, you know, code contracts and things where it's like I want to be able to introduce some stuff, a preview of code changes and, you know, refactoring and some of that kind of stuff more in place. Like, there's interesting places you could use those metaphors. The thing is, I think you want as much screen real estate as you can for code. And a lot of people are like, I'm using the keyboard, don't put a bunch of gratuitous stuff in there. And I think that the way that this tool is lined up and the way that it works, you know, personally I actually feel like it's not necessarily a fantastic candidate for touch necessarily, right? I mean, I think it really wants, you know, the high pixel density, the keyboard support and that kind of stuff. So there may at some point become other, you know, types of apps that we have where touch is going to make sense. And you will see us over time probably create Metro-style applications that are for that. Imagine, for example, a nice Metro portal for TFS where I want to kick off a build or look at the KPIs or kick off test cases. I mean, those sorts of things would really make sense for that kind of interface. Even, for example, the dashboards that run in the browser. Those are examples where touch is actually interesting because now I can look at my Scrum task board and I say, I'm done with that, go drag the box from one to another. You know, we actually, if you notice the latest release, when you have a task in the task board, notice that the amount of time remaining is pretty big and pretty fat. It's explicitly so that with a touch screen, you could actually walk up to a great big, you know, touch screen on the wall and click it, and it would drop down. You could pick with your finger and say, I've actually got 3 hours left, and I don't need a mouse when I'm at a stand-up. You know, so those, I think, are good examples. The IDE, I don't think it lends itself incredibly well to it. Okay. And thank you for confirming ribbon no. I now have new data, so when that comes back. Okay, let's look at the next set of stuff here. .NET for Fruitbooks and other environments. So So .NET, I mean, the core thing we've got there, we're building out, you know, core support in all the places we have for the Microsoft platforms. We've obviously standardized a bunch of the ECMA and other sort of related stuff. And I think the approach that we're taking, you probably have seen more recently, is we have released a lot of components for .NET through open source channels. So most recently, you know, my colleague Scott, I own VisualStudio.NET, the JavaScript runtimes, those sorts of things. Scott owns our Azure tooling, which also then plugs in, so the File New Project MVC stuff, et cetera. They have released a bunch of MVC and ASP.NET through open source channels, which means that you can now go off and go use that. In addition, in the past, we've had Miguel and his efforts around now Xamarin is the name of his startup, where we do have some .NET implementations for other sorts of platforms and stuff like that. But we're concentrating our efforts on really trying to bring the innovation onto the Microsoft platforms and just making sure that, you know, in cases where it really makes sense for you to have the source code and make changes and do that work, we'd absolutely encourage people to go do that. There was a lot of requests in particular around ASP.NET. Can you give me that source code? I'd like to make some fixes, you know, have a contribution loop and those sort of things. And so we've got a bunch of new things that are there. So I don't think you'll see that. I sometimes get asked, you know, can you have Visual Studio build Mac applications? Probably not going to do that either. It's a, you know, there's a, I think if you're building native Mac applications, you're going to use Xcode. What we will do, you know, if you're writing Android, for example, Java, you're going to use Eclipse. Right? Those are pretty mature tool bases for that. Now, the thing that we will do, and you have seen us do, well, maybe you haven't, we do want to support the entire team, though. It's not uncommon at all for people to have, of course, we're going to do great on .NET, but sometimes you'll have a back-end team that writes some stuff in Java. You might have multiple clients that you're actually authoring today. What we don't want to do is leave you guys all stuck with all sorts of different, you know, solutions. So you might be in a different IDE to go build that, but you're still one team. And so if you look at Team Explorer everywhere, we have a version of TFS and the client that works on the Mac. It works on Linux. I own Visual Studio, and I'm probably one of the biggest people of shipping Eclipse. So we have an Eclipse plugin, and Team Explorer everywhere for the Linux environment is actually an Eclipse RCP, because, you know, it makes sense. If you and your partner team, you're using these other environments, you'd still like to have one backlog. You'd still like to be able to file bugs with each other. You'd still like to be able to track your progress on milestones and that kind of stuff. So we're absolutely supporting that. And you'll see a bunch of the announcements that came from Azure last week for the cloud with Node, first-class .NET support, but also Java support, and the Team Foundation service preview, you're going to see us, you know, have support for those sorts of environments. Because, you know, oftentimes that is kind of the reality of what your work life is. Are people doing a lot of heterogeneous teams today? Or is everybody .NET? Everybody's .NET. Yay. Of course, I'd love everybody to, okay, I see a lot of nods going, yeah, of course, we have a lot of different types of, yeah. So I want to make sure you have first-class tools for that, right? And then, of course, when you're writing .NET, C++, et cetera, we hope that Visual Studio is the best possible environment. Okay, so what's new for Entity Framework? There's a bunch of new stuff that's coming through with EF4.5. I recently spent a few weekends actually writing a bunch of a POCO code. We had migrations that were in there, and so there's some new stuff that's coming in around that. And in fact, the team is moving incredibly fast. I think they're now more describing Entity Framework 5, and they've got releases for, you know, subsequent versions after that. So there's a lot of first-class support in there for all the NuGet and the console stuff. The package manager you can use through Interactive, or you can use NuGet in order to pull those back. There's obviously a bunch of cool support around migrations in particular, and a bunch of stuff coming through. I still want enums. They're working on enums, so I definitely want to be able to persist enums and get those that content in there as well. But there's a bunch of new stuff that's coming. If you go up onto the ADO.NET blog, which we probably need to rename that at some point, there's a bunch of detailed walkthroughs. That's another thing we like to do a lot is create sites of stuff and names and product names and that kind of stuff. So there's a bunch of new details on exactly what's coming through the system for Entity Framework. But, you know, it's a pretty cool system. There's an active team definitely working through that. Let's see, the next one up here was on GC performance. We've done a few things in GC performance. I'd be curious to hear the precise question. But one of the things we just did recently, if you saw, is we moved all of the Bing properties to Windows Server 2012 RC. So all of Bing, and that's a huge number, servers, et cetera, and there's a bunch of that running on .NET Framework 4.5. And one of the things we did was made significant changes into the collector in order to be able to handle the kind of scale that you're seeing, you know, with those big, big kind of workloads. Oftentimes when you're doing that kind of thing, it has to do with being able to scale out and actually do a better allocation system across CPUs, because you want to affinitize across CPUs so they can do a whole bunch of workloads separately. If you stop to collect and halt all threads, the whole server just kind of chunks, right? So we basically have a bunch of that kind of stuff. So I don't know if there was a specific comment around GC performance, or I think it was on this side of the room that we need to address, but were there issues running into, or?
I just wonder, what did you do to make a faster GC, server GC, GC?
Yeah, server GC. So that's kind of what I was just describing. There was a significant amount of work that was done on server GC, again, to keep the concurrency kind of running. So we actually had two GCs. There's one that works for more interactive mode when you're like using desktop like Visual Studio. And that one's more about responsive time on the active UI thread. The server GC is actually designed to do more of a scale-out architecture like I described. So most of it's affinitizing the heaps so that they actually don't block each other. And that way when units of work come in, like a web request, et cetera, then they don't block. There's actually a good blog post that's up there. I'll probably put a tweet. Let me tweet a pointer to that, because there's actually a big detailed walkthrough, a bunch of the new stuff in .NET Framework 4.5, which might be interesting. Okay. WCF services and web API, et cetera. One of the things I think you're seeing with those in OData, there's kind of a set of questions around connectivity and those sort of things. A few things on those. One, OData, I think, is becoming very, very popular. You saw us yesterday talk about the SAP kind of NetWeaver. That's a gateway. But we've also, you know, you can use OData to go get the Netflix catalog. I can go look up movies, and we've done a bunch of demos on that as well. I'd like, you know, that kind of standards-based support. We just submitted, along with a number of other vendors, OData off to the OASIS standards body. So we can actually have that standardized across the industry. So you're basically seeing a whole bunch of us, IBM, where otherwise might be business competitors, but we're all kind of pushing, you know, in that direction. And I think now you're seeing us add that back into the tooling support. Lightswitch was probably just the latest example of that. Beyond that, you get into the communications protocols, and you're seeing a bunch of cool things in there as well. We'll continue to evolve and work on WCF for those sort of services. You're also going to see some of that new support come in through MVC. So if you play with API controller, API controller is another good example of this, where I can actually create a new MVC type, and my controllers, in addition to being the model view controller, I can actually have it stub out and give me the usual REST metaphors. And that means I can actually program those very directly from inside of my web application. And I've written web apps where I've got, you know, API controller for one set of controllers and another one for my views. And actually, I managed to squeeze jQuery Mobile into the same project. I don't know if I'd recommend that. It's not the default template. It took me a while to get all my cascading style sheets and jQuery includes to work, but you can do it. So you get all of that kind of combination. That I think is pretty cool, because if you think back to the architecture we talked about, if I'm going to put a bunch of business logic in the back end and connect up a bunch of clients, being able to do that with REST, I think, is a great pattern to be able to support that. So I think what you'll see is we'll continue to do a good job supporting REST, supporting standards. That's pretty much where a lot of this kind of broad applicability is. We'll continue to evolve our existing protocols. So if you're using, you know, WCF deeply with those technologies, of course you can still do REST there as well, and we'll continue to support those APIs. I think as you start adding business logic in the future, you're going to see more and more clients that want to hook up using REST and those sort of standards. And so that's where we're adding, you know, a bunch of focus and making sure that you can do, you know, a good job with that. Okay. App Fabric, yes, we have. So there's a bunch of new stuff that we have in .NET Framework. I'm sorry, I want to make sure we don't run out of time here. We've done a bunch of new stuff across .NET Framework 4.5. There's new improvements in basically all the areas. I won't try and go through all of them, because we actually have a very detailed blog post that walks through all of the stuff that we've done. So there's changes in workflow, there's changes for Fabric and those sort of things, the performance improvements that we talked about before, in addition to a bunch of feedback that you've given us. So there's a whole bunch of new stuff to discover in there. I think that'll be a pretty cool release, and I think you'll like that. Now, platform roadmap. Can we put that one with the lottery numbers? It's probably with a similar kind of productivity. Let me tell you this, from a platform roadmap perspective, You can probably take some of our product numbers and add a number to them. We're going to keep doing Windows. We're going to keep doing Office. I don't know what naming scheme that they're going to wind up going off and using. But I think you're seeing a couple of different things that are interesting to look at, though. One, we are trying very hard to get much more consistency across our client platforms. And so if you look now with Windows 8 Metro and you look at Windows Phone, you know, Windows Phone had the kind of tiles and the updates and that sort of stuff that was already present. Now you're seeing Windows 8 Metro adding similar sort of things, which I think is nice. A lot of the kind of shared markup and shared formats and those stuff will make it easy for you to target both. And of course, we want the platforms to be able to be easily tooled by Visual Studio. So once you figure out how to do one, you can build an app for all of these things. Makes it pretty straightforward. So we'll continue to do those sorts of things. The other big trend you're going to see us is doing a heck of a lot more around services. So we're a good example of that. We're doing Team Foundation Service. That's our cloud version of TFS. And you should expect to see more and more developer services that we start to do. So not only will you be able to use the cloud for your target so you can build your own apps, but we'll start using it as part of the solutions. So Visual Studio hooked up to it. You saw that we have cloud builds now. How many people have signed up for the service preview? Have you guys tried that yet? Definitely try that. It's awesome. We've been using it actually, and of course, with the announcement yesterday, very easy, tfspreview.com. And you go up here, you can just get started for free. It'll kind of give you a background and all the rest of that. You can just kind of go in and sign up. When you do that, what you get basically is a home page. I'll pull up one of the sample projects that I have here. There it is. That one might not be here yet. We'll try it. But what you get essentially, oh yeah, there it is. You're going to get this interface that you see right here. I'm going to be able to go in and access things like the source control, the work items, the rest of it. It's really simple. Once I get the API set, you don't have to go set anything up, right? Once you do that account creation, less than 60 seconds, you have a URL. And it's giving you a backing database for TFS. I can now have work items. I can check in source code. I can use task boards, go off and go create, all those sorts of components. And it's basically just about 60 seconds in. And when you go back and say connect to Team Foundation, inside of Visual Studio, just type in the URL and you're done. Right? So at that point, there's no headaches on the setups and the rest of it, and it's basically just sitting up in the cloud. We've actually started using it ourselves, even for events like this, just for checking in all of our source code and the rest of it. So I think that trend, though, what I'm really talking about is, hey, embracing services, using the cloud, those sorts of things. So from a roadmap perspective, you'll definitely see more of that. And that'll help you with some of the tools. So the example we have, I mentioned we did a bunch of stuff in the browser. So you can do work item tracking and editing in the browser. You have task boards and those sort of things also in the browser. We'll see more of that hooked up to the cloud services in the back end. And the rich client will continue to put first-class stuff in there as well. Okay. Windows Phone's a new release. Nothing to say yet on the next version or if there's a next version of Windows Phone. You got the nice T-shirt. We love Windows Phone. We did a bunch of stuff. I've been using a Nokia. I've got the 800. Got it from Germany, actually. It's pretty cool once I got the right language code set. My college German's a little rusty, but once I got that going, it's a very nice device. We will continue to make improvements for the phone, so stay tuned for that. You'll hear more about what we're doing. One of the questions that typically comes up is, hey, when I got the RC or the beta, where were the phone tools? And where was the Azure tools? And one of the things we run into is we usually synchronize those components with the platforms, okay? And so what you saw, for example, is the RC came out and didn't support Azure directly inside of the box. That's mostly because Azure itself wasn't ready. Now, I can tell you now that when we released the RC, we knew that Scott was going down, last week to go announce this big new thing. In fact, we build the Azure tools in my team. And so we had them all ready. They were sitting on the shelf and ready to go, but we were waiting for the event. And so there's a lot of questions like, hey, where is it? Where is it? And it's like, well, just wait for 10 days. We can't tell you that because it's a surprise. So the surprise comes out. There's the build. And today you can go download all of it. And there's a bunch of really cool stuff in there. And so all I can say is when you don't see a platform that's kind of there, usually what that means is that we probably are working on something, but we're going to synchronize the platform components generally with the platforms. And we've designed the Visual Studio piece so that we can always plug in new plugins and that kind of stuff as well. So it's pretty easy once it comes out and keep at it. We actually shipped about 75 new components in the last 12 months. I don't know if people know that. 75. Yeah, that was just the last 12 months. And that includes all the power tool releases that we did, the feature pack releases we did, you know, Azure SDKs that have come out, additional plugins and changes for Office, you know, some of the additional sort of stuff like that, the galleries. And I think you'll see that stuff getting faster and faster with NuGet, being able to download packages and those sort of stuff as well. Okay. All right, so that's a whole bunch of stuff in here. So we're almost out of time. Let me stop. Did I miss anything? Scott's in Redmond. Scott was originally going to be here. He was called back at the last minute, so I apologize for the change on the catalog and the calendar on that. We had everything planned and ready to go. Typically, Scott and I usually do these sessions together, and then we have a combination of both. So that's where he's at. We talked about workflow and .NET Framework 4 up on top. I don't know what the lottery numbers are. I sure wish I did. Is somebody, that was the Phil Lucky comment. MVC, sorry. Yes, web forms to MVC. Yes, so the question, yes, thank you. Web forms to MVC. And so, the first thing I want to make sure that we say is that we're continuing to make support and evolving in web forms, right? So there's a new stuff coming out in 2012. We'll continue to do those sort of things on there. With respect to migration, that kind of stuff, we're not really doing, you know, anything too formal or auto magic on trying to translate those. In some ways, the metaphors are slightly different. I mean, you can do some level of composition. My general experience on these sorts of things is, because we had, you know, similar kind of questions on, hey, can I just take my existing WPF or Silverlight application, and could you just go make that work on Metro, because that would save me a lot of time. Well, you know, it's a fair question, right? I mean, because the markup, you know, it's otherwise kind of the same, and so I totally get that. I will tell you my experience with that is, for anybody that ever did Visual Basic, you know, and VBA code, we used to have a converter that tried to actually take, like, VBA and VB6 syntax and put it into visualbasic.net. And the problem is, it almost works. You ever had that, you know, like, and that's the worst possible case, right? Because I take the existing code, and it says, yeah, hey, no errors and warnings, but it didn't kind of work. And shoot, same thing with taking, like, C++ native code and trying to just take that and just turn it into C#. A little bit different than CLI, that's a little, you know, than /CLI. But, like, the problem that you always find with it is the algorithms and what you optimize for are often different. Like, in that case, like, take turning something into C#. The problem is, when I write C++, I write that code based on the pointer metaphors where I have a heap and I allocate stuff and it doesn't move unless I built, you know, a heap with movement. Whereas the GC is optimized for fast, you know, turn around and allocate a bunch of stuff and throw it away. And so when you take those two algorithms back, you actually cause the GC to start to stall in weird sorts of ways. And so I've had people that have done this kind of thing where you take, you know, C++, turn it into C#, and like, God, you guys are really slow. The CLR sucks. We come back and look at it, it's like, well, dude, don't do it that way. Here's a new version of your code that uses the APIs and uses the GC. It's like, oh, wow, this is faster than my old code. It's like, okay, good, that's what we'd like to see. And so those are, you know, that's kind of the approach that I've seen in the past. So I'm usually trying to be careful about those kind of auto-conversion sort of things. But that was, you can write in both. We have first-class support in 2012 for web forms as well as MVC, and I think with some of the loosely coupled servicing components and stuff like that, you can actually try and compose. I think they're both interesting and for various sorts of things. You know, you can do both. Okay. Any final questions or anything else that I missed? Silver, oh, thank you. Why did I miss that one? That's a big one. Oh, we kind of talked a little bit about Silverlight. Well, we talked about XAML and that kind of stuff. We released Silverlight 5, obviously, last year. We got the support policy out there for that and kind of like the duration that we're going to go have it. I think the key thing you'll see with Silverlight, we still have support in here. The light switch demo that I gave yesterday, the desktop portion was actually running in Silverlight. So we still have that kind of support as well. I think the thing you're going to see, though, is something like XAML, for example. We've got that in multiple places. So we've got it in WPF. We've got it in Silverlight. We've also got it in the Metro style. And we kind of talked about, well, why is that different and why we have that. So we'll continue to do that. And then we have HTML. I think the one thing is, if you're looking for maximum possible reach, right, where it's like, you know, there's TVs coming out with web browsers built into them and, you know, all sorts of devices and that kind of thing. If I just look at the way the industry is evolving, especially with some vendor policies on, you know, how they think about plugins and those sorts of things, I think the best possible way to get maximum possible reach is going to be HTML5. And that's why you're seeing us invest in HTML5, right? So we still have Silverlight. We're still supporting Silverlight, and we're using those technologies, the markup, the coding, all the rest of that, and we're putting them into first-class places. You know, but I think if you're looking for maximum possible reach, you know, HTML5 is the best way to go after that. Cool. Okay, did I miss anything else? Yes, sir. IntelliTrade, oh yes, which version of Ultimate? I'm really bad without checkboxes. So we have IntelliTrace is in Ultimate, and I believe it's still in Ultimate. We did actually publish a long blog entry of where things live, and that one is still in Ultimate. It's possible. The question is, will it ever move out of Ultimate? It's possible. I think generally what we wind up doing when we pick where features go, we're trying to look across the feature, make sure it works very well from end to end. And IntelliTrace is part of a workflow that matches other features that are also in Ultimate and work with the test professional stuff. Now, I can show you, for example, we added profiling down in the Express SKUs, and we added unit testing there as well. And that's an example where we took some of the scenarios and changed them into other SKUs to make them go back and forth. So it's quite possible that we would wind up making changes, but for this release, that's where it's at. Cool. Yes, attaching IntelliTrace after the process has started. We've actually got some of that support for IntelliTrace in production. So if you've seen the new stuff that we've added this go around for IntelliTrace in production to be able to do it, we actually come back in and we use some rejetting technology to basically regenerate some code and content for profiling related sort of stuff. Okay, well, we'll talk to him. Light switch, yep, new version out inside of 2012, demoed yesterday with HTML and that kind of stuff. And we'll have that go. We're about out of. Let me do this. I think we're about out of time. So let me say this. I'll hang around up here for a second for any final questions, so we can get people off to the next session. So thank you very much for coming.